Good morning. Welcome to 3 hours of live and local radio on WNTK 99.7 FM in Newport, New Hampshire, and WUVR 1490 AM and 98.9 FM in Lebanon, New Hampshire. This is Saturday Sports Talk, your weekly catch-up. What's happening in high school and college sports around the Upper Valley? I'm Greg Fettel. Coming up in the next hour, it's going to be pretty much Dartmouth talk today as we are in between seasons. High schools looked like they were going to get some outdoor practices until Mother Nature got in the way last week. They won't be playing for keeps for another couple more weeks. So let's talk some Dartmouth stuff today. Look to what happened in the past week, including Dartmouth men's hockey wrapping up at the ECAC tournament, and looking to what's been going on with basketball, or I should say baseball, softball, lacrosse, and other sports up in Hanover. Some other interesting developments on the sides in Dartmouth territory, and also some thoughts on one of my favorite cities in the world as we wrap up the program a little bit later on here from the Hilton Garden Inn in Lebanon on the Bombard Road, right by Route 120. It's where we do this every Saturday, me for an hour, and then right afterward at 10:06 after the weather and the news at the top of the hour. This time it'll be Bob Hingston filling in for Rich Parker along with Rob Woodard for Valley Buzz. That goes from 10:06 up till 12 to wrap up your 3 hours of live and local on a beautiful Saturday morning, final Saturday in the month of March. But that's not it for live radio on WNTK. Now we can finally say it. The Red Sox season is underway. They are out west getting their western swing done early this year. They've already played two out in Seattle. Game three of the four games set at T-Mobile Park is tonight, 9:40 first pitch, 8:40 the scheduled broadcast time on 99.7 FM. So lots of fun for you here on WNTK, WUVR throughout the day. We got Tobin back in the studio in Newport, 603-843-8623 to call in and join the conversation either here or on Valley Buzz, so feel free to do so as the spirit moves. And until we get to that point, let's do what we always do here on Saturday Sports Talk. Not everything that happened in the world of sports on Friday night made it to Saturday's newspaper. That's why we read about it. The Boston Red Sox, as you know, not a whole lot expected out of them this season. I think most predictions have them in the basement of the American League East. So to have success this year, they're going to have success on the mound. And they certainly had it last night. Nick Pivetta going six innings, struck out 10, just allowed three hits, but unfortunately one of those was a home run pushed around the right field foul pole in the sixth inning, and that was the only run of the game as Seattle beat the Red Sox last night 1-0. At T-Mobile Park in a game you heard on WNTK, perhaps after you took an afternoon nap so you could stay up late past your bedtime. The 31-year-old Pivetta has been fairly solid for the Red Sox for the past couple of years, predominantly as a long man out of the bullpen, but it was obvious that if he could get over his first inning issues, he would be a solid contributor to the starting rotation. Certainly looked like it last night, manager Alex Cora noting that he pretty much had all of his stuff. A breaking ball that did not work very well through spring training showed up for strikes yesterday. Cutter was good. Sweeper was good. Fastball topping out at 93, 94 miles an hour, according to Cora. It was a good effort by Pivetta. Unfortunately, the offense could not find its way around an equally good effort on the part of Seattle's starter on the night. I had the name right here. It's, George Kirby, who threw shade over six innings himself, only allowed four hits, struck out eight, and was the winning pitcher for the Mariners last night. Josh Winkowski also coming in through two shutout innings of relief, so the Sox got the mound work they needed, just could not get the offense going last night, and they fall to 1-1 on the young season. Seattle 1 and Boston nothing, and they'll do it again at 8:40 with the pregame 9:40 first pitch on WNTK tonight. The Sox went without Rafi Devers last night. He reported some left shoulder soreness and was scratched from the lineup about an hour and 20 minutes before game number two in the series. He had a two-run homer and a double in the Sox 6-4 season opening win on Thursday night, but took the night off last night. Bobby Dalbec filled in at third base. Dever said the injury traces back to late in spring training. He tweaked the shoulder hitting off of a pitching machine, but he thinks he'll be back soon. It could be as early as tonight. Major League Baseball scoreboard from yesterday. There were a couple of games that had to be made up already after rainouts on opening day on Thursday. The Brewers were a 3-1 winner over the Mets in New York, and Atlanta rolled up a 9-3 victory on the Philadelphia Phillies. Among the regularly scheduled games, Tampa over Toronto 8-2. Pittsburgh beat the Marlins in Miami 7-2. Yankees were 7-1 winners in Houston. They've won their first two, the Yanks have. Arizona 7, Colorado 3. Cleveland a 6-4 winner in front of about 3,800 crickets in Oakland last night. You know about the Red Sox win, the Giants beating the Padres 8-3, and the Cardinals were losers to the LA Dodgers 6-3 out west in a game in which some dude named Mookie Betts had a leadoff home run for the Dodgers. 29th he's had for the team, and that is a Dodgers record. Too bad Red Sox can't get guys like Mookie Betts. You know, you kind of wonder about that a little bit. The NCAA tournament finds itself in the almost the Elite Eight stage. We're getting to that point after Sweet 16 games yesterday. In the Midwest region last night, top-seeded Purdue with Zach Edey leading the way again with 27 points and 14 rebounds, moved on to the quarterfinals with an 80-68 win over Gonzaga. And in the other Midwest game last night, Tennessee, second seed, beat Creighton, the third seed, 82-75, so they advance to Elite Eight contest tomorrow. In the South region, bit of a surprise, number four, Duke, getting 16 points from Kyle Filipowski, turned out number one, Houston, 54-51 the count there. And NC State, they are the upset darlings heading into the Elite Eight. The 11th-seeded Wolfpack was a 67-58 winner over Marquette last night. The games on the men's scoreboard for today, we'll tell you all about it in a second if I could get to the correct page on the screen here. It'll be Elite Eight action in the East region at TD Garden in Boston at 6 o'clock tonight as third-seeded Illinois goes up against number one, UConn. And in the late game, number six-seed Clemson, four-seeded Alabama meeting in the West region title game at Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles. On the women's side, some intriguing stuff happening in Elite Eight, or rather Sweet 16 action last night. The most interesting game happened in the regional one in Albany as undefeated top-ranked South Carolina had all it could handle to hold off fourth-seeded Indiana 79-75. The Gamecocks had a 22-point lead at one point. The Hoosiers whittled that down to, I believe, 3 points in the late going of the fourth quarter before running out of steam. So South Carolina's bid for an undefeated championship season continues on after a narrow win last night. Also in Albany, one action, third-seeded Oregon State over number two, Notre Dame, 70-65. More on that in a moment. In the Portland 4 region, it was number one Texas beating fourth-seeded Gonzaga 69-47, and the NC State women joined the NC State men in the Elite Eight with a 77-67 win over Stanford out in Portland. Speaking of Notre Dame, rather interesting development from Notre Dame's loss last night, in which freshman All-American Hannah Hidalgo had to take a seat on the bench for about 4 minutes to have her nose ring removed in the middle of that loss to Oregon State. Apparently, the NCAA decided to choose that moment to enforce a rule prohibiting jewelry during the game. It turned into a bit of a bloody mess while it was all going on. She cooled off, her shooting was off, and she wasn't the factor that she should have been in a contest that the referees pick a bad time to enforce a rule in the rule book that Notre Dame said had not been enforced much, if at all, during the regular season. Professional basketball, Brittany Griner is going to be back in the WNBA this season. She has agreed to a one-year contract to return to the Phoenix Mercury. She re-signed with the only team that she's ever played for, the team announced last night on social media. It'll be officially announced next week. 33-year-old returned last year, missed all of 2022 because of that diplomatic incident, and I use that in fat quotations, with Russia keeping her in a jail over a trumped-up charge. She did play in the second most games of her career this past year, averaging 17.5 points per game for a Mercury team that was only 9-31. Busy schedule in the NBA last night, but the Boston Celtics were among the teams that were off last night. They play in New Orleans. I believe it's a 5 o'clock tap-off tonight. Yesterday's scoreboard, Detroit 96, Washington 87. LA Clippers win in Orlando 100-97. Pacers hold serve at home 109-90 over the Lakers. Golden State a 115-97 winner in Charlotte. Cleveland held off Philadelphia 117-114. Nets were 125-108 winners over the Chicago Bulls. 40 points, 20 rebounds for Victor Wembanyama, countering a 61-point effort from the Knicks' Jalen Brunson. San Antonio, a 131-26 winner over New York in overtime. Oklahoma City, 128-103 over Phoenix. Miami blew up Portland, 142-82. Yikes. Minnesota, 111-98 over Denver. The Rockets edged the Jazz 101-100, and Dallas, a 107-103 winner in Sacramento over the Kings last night. College hockey's action in the NCAA tournament at the Providence Regional. Top-seeded Boston College easily over Michigan Tech 6-1, and ECAC regular season champion Quinnipiac needed overtime to take out Wisconsin 3-2. Quinnipiac, the defending NCAA champions. Michigan State and Michigan won in action at Maryland Maryland Heights, that's outside of St. Louis, to continue first-round action in the NCAA hockey tournament. Today's action at the Springfield Regional Final, Cornell taking on Denver. The Big Red, of course, made it by winning the ECAC tournament last weekend in Lake Placid. Boston University has a date in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, taking on Minnesota for the Sioux Falls Regional Final a little bit earlier on tonight. NHL last night was down to just a single solitary game, and the Buffalo Sabres won it, coming back from a 2-0 deficit to beat New Jersey by a 5-2 tally. That leaves a full schedule of NHL action, 15 games, 30 teams involved. That includes your Boston Bruins, who are in Washington to take on the Capitals. Bruins have clinched a playoff spot. Now it is a matter of figuring out where their seed could be. They could be anywhere from first to fourth in the East, depending on how things cotton out over the last 8 games of the regular season. As of right now, they are 2 points up on Florida in their division, but Florida has a game in hand. Conference-wise, the Rangers have the best record at 102 points, with Carolina and Boston both tied at 99. Rangers with a game in hand in that. The wild card spots right now, Tampa Bay looking solid to grab one. Washington holds the other right now. Caps are only a point behind Philadelphia, though, for third place in the Metropolitan Division, and the Detroit Red Wings are still in the picture, 2 points out in the wild card. Islanders starting to fade. They're 4 out. Devils are 5 out as the season continues to wind down toward its inevitable conclusion. Some notes from the NFL yesterday. Trade for the Philadelphia Eagles. They sent pass rusher Hassan Reddick to the New York Jets for a conditional 2026 draft pick. The Miami Dolphins say that they are going to pick up Raheem Mostert for another year, new 2-year deal worth up to $9.075 million, according to NFL.com, agreed upon yesterday. And the Kansas City Chiefs have found themselves an interesting option to add to their offense. Louis Rhys-Zamet, you may have heard the name. He's a gentleman who is well known in rugby circles in Wales, had decided to give up the sport to try to fulfill his NFL dream, and reportedly the Chiefs are going to take him up on it on a 3-year contract for somebody who has no professional football experience, at least from the American standpoint, but athletically offers options as perhaps a running back, perhaps a receiver, tight end, hybrid type of offensive player, and obviously a guy who, like Travis Kelce, likes to throw the occasional lateral. It could be fun to see what they do with this guy if he makes the 53-man roster. Major League Soccer is a full schedule, but because there's 29 teams, one always has to opt out on any given weekend. This weekend, it's the New England Revolution. They don't play again until a CONCACAF Champions match with America of Mexico coming up on Tuesday. But when they do get back to action, Coach Caleb Porter is going to be a lot lighter in the wallet. He was fined by Major League Soccer on Friday for criticizing replacement officials that worked his team's games while unionized referees and assistants were locked out. MLS didn't announce the amount of the fine. However, Porter has not done much as the Revolution's coach. They are the worst team in Major League Soccer as far as regular season action is concerned, 4 losses and 1 draw in 5 matches so far. Looking like Lionel Messi is going to miss another match for Inter Miami. They're supposed to take on New York City FC today, continuing to deal with a hamstring injury. Coach Tata Martino is hoping Messi will be back for CONCACAF Champs League quarterfinal action against Monterrey of Mexico coming up next week. PGA Tour going on at Houston Open right now. The development of the day, Scott Scheffler was carrying a record, PGA Tour record, of under par rounds and was on the 18th hole yesterday in position to extend it with a 1-foot 10-inch putt that he ended up missing. Even par 70 to cap his round. So 28 straight rounds under par, still a big PGA Tour record, and his play keeps him in the hunt at 5 under par through 36 holes. He is 4 shots off the pace, led by Tony Finau. LPGA Tour finds itself in Arizona is where they are for the weekend. They are playing the Ford Championship, and Australia's Hannah Green has the lead at 14 under par. NASCAR this weekend, first of 2 races this year at Richmond International Raceway, is the Toyota Owners 400. It gets started at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. That's Read About It. It is 9:20. We come back and look at the past week of Dartmouth sports news next, right here on Saturday Sports Talk. Stick around. 9:24 on Saturday Sports Talk, and what's looking like a beautiful, comparatively speaking, final Saturday of March here in the Upper Valley. Greg Fennell with you in WNTK, 603-843-8623, the number to call for the program. Or, as Rob Woodard called it, as he walked in here just before the show got started, a lot easier drive into the Hilton Garden Inn today than it was this time last week. I had a really unusual, cold, wet, enjoyable experience last Saturday. I did the public address announcing for Dartmouth men's lacrosse against Penn in a snowstorm at Scully Fahey Field. A lot of us who were working the game just found it really bizarre that the Ivy League in Dartmouth would even attempt this on a day like we had yesterday. I mean, by the time the snow ended, and it snowed for well over 12 hours steady, if not longer, where I live, and our ultimate tally ended up being, I think, somewhere between 18 and 20 inches. Given that the snow was, you know, basically at its height, it did increase at some point during the afternoon. A lot of us were openly wondering how Dartmouth could pull this off and how the Ivy League could pull this off. And with the work of the guys at Dartmouth Buildings and Grounds, they made it possible. It wasn't easy, that's for darn sure. I got there an hour before game time. They already had two backhoes on Scully Fahey Field with snow scoops on the front, pushing snow in every which way they could. And literally within 2 minutes after clearing the field, you couldn't see the lines again. So they were constantly doing that before the players were able to get out on the field. Fortunately, Dartmouth has the indoor practice facility next door, so they didn't have to warm up outdoors. And I think most teams got their warm-ups, both teams got their warm-ups done for the most part indoors before they came out to the field about 10 minutes before game time was supposed to happen. But the Buildings and Grounds crew was clearing the field right up to that point. Whenever there was a stoppage in play for a timeout or for a media break, they had the guys with shovels clearing the center line, the guys with shovels clearing the goal creases. There were some whiny parents from Penn who complained that their crease supposedly was not being cleared as thoroughly as Dartmouth's. There are those in every crowd. But by and large, they did a great job. And actually, the snow wasn't as big a factor as I thought it might be. Yes, there was a lot of slipping out there, but generally speaking, not in circumstances where it caused a change in possession, for instance, or created wide-open scoring opportunities. They did play with an orange ball, so it was easier to see. I think it was looked easier to see in photographs after the fact, assuming the ball wasn't touched up in the editing process, than it was watching it from the sideline. If you haven't been to a men's lacrosse game before, the public address announcing is done from an open-air booth at midfield, at field level. We aren't up in the press box, and we have to communicate with the sports information person from Dartmouth who gets to stay in the warmer press box. It can make for an interesting experience. A month earlier, when I did the season opener with Holy Cross, it was blowing all day. It was like 25 degrees, 20-mile-an-hour winds for the most part. You had to be dressed for standing on top of a mountain to get through that. I was prepared. I was well-dressed. I had my snow pants on. I had my bright orange traffic cone ski parka. I was okay in that regard. The problem was the snow would eventually kind of drift onto the desktop, where I was putting my papers down so I could track scores, track penalties. One of the people wanted me to keep information on those penalties. The sheet that was on the table eventually got soaked and froze to it. I just couldn't do anything with it. But bottom line, it worked out well. It was an entertaining game. Penn came in 13th ranked in the country, went out with an 11-8 victory. Dartmouth had a lead in the first half, went through a long scoreless spell in the second half. The game was tied 6-6 at the break. And that's when Penn won it. They put a three-goal run together in the third quarter to stretch that lead, and Dartmouth, I don't think, ever got much closer than that. But they got it done, and congratulations to the guys in Dartmouth Buildings and Grounds. They get overlooked a lot for all the good stuff they do, but boy, were they out there in force, and boy, did they do a heck of a job last Saturday. The women's game that was supposed to be last Saturday against Yale got bumped back 24 hours, so they didn't have to deal with the falling snow and all the after effects. Everything had been cleared. You had this beautiful backdrop of snow bordering the field on three sides, you know, no different from the men, it's just there wasn't any snow coming down. Yale took it to the big green in that one, 15-5, but the Bulldogs are 16th in the country. Dartmouth is not. Developments also from last weekend, the men's baseball team, congratulations to Bob Whalen and company, as they went down to Yale, they played two games the prior Friday, I believe they split those two games, and then won the rubber game on Sunday down at Yale. 3-1 was the decision in that one. So Dartmouth taking 2 out of 3 from Yale, and really off to a good start as far as Ivy League play is concerned. That is a very encouraging sign. The pitching did the job again. Eddie Albert, who is the number 3 starter for the most part for Dartmouth, only gave up a run and 4 hits. Pardon me a second here. Over 5 1/3 innings, threw 95 pitches, very effective. Danny Will came in, got the win in relief, and Jack Metzger held it with an inning and a third of relief pitching for his third save of the season so far. The hitting, not a whole lot of it for the Big Green. They had 6 hits on the day. Nathan Semelia, the catcher, he had a 2-for-4 day, and center fielder Jackson Hauer the same with 2 runs batted in. Nico Banez, was hit by a pitch. I thought I saw a home run there, but no, that's not the case. The Big Green with 6 hits altogether, holding Yale to 6 hits, and getting a nice 3-1 victory as they head off to Cornell for baseball activity this weekend. Other developments of Dartmouth nature coming from the earlier part of the week, in addition to baseball getting that victory, softball dropped a 5-2 decision to Boston College on Tuesday after long after the snow had been cleared over there. That was an interesting game also. Boston College came into the contest with 20 wins in 29 games. They had more victories than Dartmouth had games played, and I think the ability level and the depth of the roster ended up being the difference in that one. What's interesting for softball right now is they are a team that has a very short bench this season. From what I've gathered, 2 people that they were counting upon for contributions this year either aren't going to be available long-term or aren't going to be available at all. The big loss is Jenna Brown. She's a junior center fielder who has a lot of speed, defends very well, and has fence power at the plate. I remember her hitting a 2-run homer, it was last year or the year before that, to win a game. I want to say it was against Brown. Might have been Yale, but it was a comeback game in which the Big Green, I believe, was down by 5 runs and managed to win it on the walk-off 2-run homer that she hit. So she reportedly has, I believe, an Achilles injury. And when you hear something like that, you just kind of think, oh, this is going to be a long-term thing. And reportedly it happened early in training camp. So I don't hold out hope seeing her return this season. We'll have to wait until next year. Also heard that Fabi Cerna, who is one of the, I believe, 5 first years recruited by the Big Green coaching staff, Jen Williams in charge of that, also is out with an injury. So we're talking a team that has only 2 pitchers on it and a total of 13 roster players. This was an issue for the Big Green softball team last year, where they were shorthanded when they needed bodies, but they also didn't have any pitching depth. Getting Jensen Hall was probably the biggest recruiting coup for Jen Williams. I've talked about her over and over again, and every time I see her pitch, every time I read about one of her outings, it just further solidifies in my mind that this kid is going to be something special. She came in on Tuesday. Rachel McCarroll pitched a serviceable first 4 innings or so. Came in the 5th inning and proceeded to strike out 6 batters over 3 innings. She also had a 2-for-3 day at the plate, drove in a couple of runs, so she played a big role in keeping the Big Green in a game against a pretty good softball team in Boston College. So Big Green dropping one by a count of 5-2, but they're back in action starting a little bit later on this afternoon with Yale in town. And more on what's coming up this weekend and the early part of the next week for Dartmouth coming up later on in the program. Wednesday saw women's lacrosse win a solid contest at New Hampshire, 19-8 the win for Dartmouth. Since there hasn't been a lot of women's lacrosse action in town, kind of like the men, you kind of forget how good this Dartmouth team could be. They're 6-3 on the season now. On the downside, they are 0-2 in league play, which is really where it all matters. But taking on a UNH team down in Durham last night, Wednesday night, really dominating them, opening up an 11-3 lead by halftime. Big Green reeled off five straight goals to close out the first quarter, with a couple of them coming from Katina Christensen, who ended up with four goals on the day. So a big game for her to lead Dartmouth to a solid victory over UNH in women's lacrosse as they return for more weekend activity. That was on Wednesday. Now on Thursday and Friday and going into the weekend, largely it's involving teams like the track team. They're down in Raleigh for the Raleigh Relays. The women's rugby team opening up spring play with sevens action. They play 15s in the fall, sevens in the spring, so they're at the Tropical Sevens tournament down at Tampa. Things just starting to work their way back into to normal speed at Dartmouth, because the spring term only just started on Monday. A lot of folks, even sports folks out of town, but everybody back, getting things wound up to high speed in spring, and we'll see how we're going to progress there. As we've seen some good stuff from baseball and softball early on, and now they're diving full on into Ivy League competition. One other note on Dartmouth softball, there have been some schedule changes for the Big Green. They were supposed to play a home single game against UMass Lowell on April 9th. That game has been canceled, and instead the Big Green will go down to Harvard and finish off the three-game set with the Crimson that did not get completed last weekend. Where we had all the snow, the Boston area had predominantly rain, and Harvard's field did not recover from the deluge it got last Saturday in order to play on Sunday. So they have rescheduled that single game down in Cambridge on April 9th. To make up for the loss of the non-league game, Dartmouth has added a contest this Tuesday. They'll take on Boston University. And if you thought BC's record was pretty impressive at 20-9, I think BU's record was 24-3 last time I checked. So again, another good Boston area Division I women's softball team coming up here to take on the Big Green, a chance to see some good action up at Hanover, and that'll be a 3 o'clock game this coming Tuesday. All right, we're going to take a timeout, come back, and look ahead to what else is coming up in the coming week, both today and a little bit beyond for Dartmouth Sports. That's next. I'm Greg Fennell, and this is Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK and WUVR. I see them looking. I make them want me.
I like to tease them.
Here on Saturday Sports Talk with your mandatory Ramones every single edition of Saturday Sports Talk right around 9:40. You'll get your little hit of the Ramones, which everybody needs to get through on a weekend, whether it's a crappy one like that one, last one, or what looks to be a good one this time around. You need it. Trust me. Greg Fennell with you on Saturday Sports Talk. Tobin at the studio, Newport, 603-843-8623. He will answer the phone if you give a ring. You could do that here. You could do that at Valley Buzz coming up at 10:06 after the news and weather. Bob Hingston again filling in for Rich Parker, who's with Dartmouth Men's Golf. They are in the middle of their spring schedule down in Hobbs Sound, Florida, to join Cornell and other schools in competition this weekend, playing, it doesn't say if it's anything specific. Often these are invitational events, so I'd expect there's more to go than just Dartmouth and Cornell playing golf on a nice course down in Florida, but we shall see when Mr. Rich comes back here in a couple of weeks. What else is going on today? Well, we had softballs. We closed out the previous segment. Softball looking ahead. The Big Green taking on Yale this weekend. They'll have two games today starting at 12:30 and another one tomorrow at 12:30 as Dartmouth looks to continue what's been an okay start so far in the college softball season. Their overall record's only 4-9, but again, it's what matters in Ivy League play that you really want to care about. And as of right now, the 1-1 start against Harvard has Dartmouth in the top half of the league standings. But what's interesting is Yale leads everybody. They are at 5-1, having played two weekends of league action so far. So they've got a pretty good record as far as league play is concerned. And overall, they played a lot more games than Dartmouth has. They've got a 9-17 record compared to Big Green's 4-9. I suspect in the latter's case, a lot of that has to do with the shorthanded roster they have, not scheduling quite as much and probably saving more room for training, especially given the youth on that Dartmouth roster. Dartmouth, what I've seen of them so far in softball, they're pitching deep. They only have two people, but they're very good. Rachel McCarroll, who's been their horse for a couple of years now, and, of course, freshman Jensen Hall, who's been nothing short of outstanding. I think she is in the top 10 nationally in strikeouts per seven innings, and I think is already beyond halfway toward breaking Dartmouth's record for strikeouts in a year that another Texan by the name of Kristen Rumley set about 10 years ago. So big stuff happening with Dartmouth softball taking on Yale this weekend at the Dartmouth Softball Complex. And again, 12:30 doubleheader today, single game tomorrow at 12:30 for the Big Green in that regard. Baseball is on the road after last weekend's successes with the trip down to Yale. While getting around some lousy weather, of course, like everybody else had to last weekend. They are in Ithaca. They're taking on Cornell this weekend. Dartmouth among the top teams in the league right now. Penn leading at 3-0 in league play, having swept its date with Brown last weekend, which is no great surprise. The Quakers went into the Ivy League baseball season as the consensus favorite to repeat as Ivy champion. And if you remember last spring, they played exceptionally well in the Auburn Regional of the NCAA tournament, and in fact, as the fourth seed, ended up in the winner's bracket. They only needed to win one last game against Southern Miss to advance to a Super Regional, which is a very rare thing for an Ivy League team. But unfortunately, Penn, their lack of depth, which is endemic for Ivy League teams when they get to that level of NCAA baseball, finally caught up with them. Southern Miss beat them twice to win the Auburn Regional advance. But still, a great year by Penn. Got a lot of guys back, and they are continuing to play well on the baseball diamond, 11-10 overall, 3-0 in league play. Dartmouth, Columbia, Princeton, all 2-1. And again, this is very early. It's the 21 league games? Yeah, the 21 league games that will determine your future in Ivy League baseball. And as of last year, the Ivies went to the four-team Ivy League tournament, where it used to be a best-of-three series between the top two teams in the league. So there's more room to get into the postseason. Already, Dartmouth has doubled its win total from last year. They were a horrible 3-36 last season. They are 6-9 so far, going out to Cornell, which is 3-11 overall, 1-2 in league play. And don't forget the local connection with Cornell Big Red Baseball. Justin DeVoid, former head coach of the Upper Valley Nighthawks, played for him in 2016 briefly. Colby Sawyer grad has worked his way, or is trying to work his way up the NCAA coaching ladder, coached at St. Lawrence for a while. He's a volunteer assistant at Cornell now in his second year, so double reason to pay attention to what happens with Dartmouth baseball this weekend. Their doubleheader today begins at 11:30, and they will play a single game tomorrow in Ithaca at Booth Field starting at noon. Men's lacrosse, they're on the road. Last week it was Penn who was number 13. Now it's Princeton who's number 13. That'll be down at Princeton Stadium coming up at 12 o'clock today. Again, to see that you're gradually making your way up the Ivy League ladder, you got to win those Ivy League games. And so far, Dartmouth has not done that yet for brand-new coach Sean Kerwin. But they have had some moments. They're 3-5 overall. They played well in very difficult conditions. Talk about welcoming people to the woods and then hitting them with snow. It couldn't have been more of a home field advantage last week against a pretty good Penn team, but Dartmouth could not pull off that victory. It'll be their third straight game against a nationally ranked opponent, but it'll be in a lot more benign conditions when they go onto Sherrard Field at the Class of 1952 Stadium for this one. Princeton dominates the series. They've won 60 of the 68 games they've played so far this year. What I've noticed from Dartmouth men's lacrosse is they don't seem to be very comfortable in a fast break mode. Kerwin has this team trying to run a deliberate offense every time up the field. They don't take advantage of odd man situations, which might be just, it could be philosophy. It could be a coaching strategy given the talent he has. It could be just a, you know, one more step on the ladder, working his way up to making the team play the kind of lacrosse he wants them to play. Generally speaking, they have cleared the ball well. They cleared successfully 23 of 27 times against the Quakers, again, in adverse conditions last week. And it's interesting because the Quakers are a team that were fifth nationally in the lowest opponent clearing percentage, and Dartmouth handled that part of the game very well, and again, in very bad conditions. It'll be different going up against a very good Princeton team that has been known to run the score up on Dartmouth many times in the recent past. Dartmouth trying to win their first Ivy League game on the road since 2009. And as I recall, I think their only two Ivy League wins in the last decade have both come against Harvard, and both came in overtime. So there's a lot riding on this one for the Big Green today. That'll be a noon start for men's lacrosse as they go down to Princeton to take on the Tigers today. Women's lacrosse has a date. They're down at Harvard. Big Green, as we know to be 6-3 overall, but 0-2 in league play. Going to need to start picking it up in that regard if they are going to have a hope of making their own Ivy League tournament. Again, top four teams in women's lacrosse will go to, I wanted to say it was the top-seeded or the first-place regular season champion, but I'm not sure if that's the case anymore. Regardless, Dartmouth at 6-3 overall, but 0-2 in league play, running in danger of falling irreparably behind in a league that at least has all schools represented. So there are seven league games to play. Dartmouth with opportunities to win against squads that haven't played so well this year, like Columbia, which is still relatively new to women's lacrosse. They will run into the Lions at some point this year. But for right now, the focus is down in Cambridge and Jordan Field. 4 o'clock start for that one. Harvard was the winner in last year's matchup, 13-11. Big Green in this one will play a team that's 5-2 overall and 1-1 in Ivy League play. So big chance for Dartmouth to come up with a definitely needed victory. We mentioned Katina Christensen. Maya Desmond also had 4 goals in that 19-8 win over UNH on Wednesday afternoon, and 9 different players altogether involved in putting the ball in the back of the net for the Big Green. So an encouraging effort for Dartmouth against UNH. Let's see if they can turn it up against Harvard a little bit later on this afternoon. As for midweek activity, as noted before, softball is out of the game against Boston University. That will be Tuesday, 3 o'clock at the Dartmouth Softball Complex. Baseball has a trip down to UMass Lowell on Tuesday, and then no activity for the most part, for the ball sports at least, until the following weekend, whereupon we will see, if I can get the schedule up here on the computer, we'll see baseball hosting Columbia, which should be fun. Columbia usually one of the better squads in the Ivy League. That'll be next weekend. And softball, hosting Brown, a very winnable series for a doubleheader Saturday and a single game on Sunday. Men's lacrosse is scheduled to go down to Harvard on Saturday of next week. And we won't see Rich Parker here again next weekend because golf will be down at the Princeton Invitational in Princeton. Women's golf will be not too far away at Rutgers Golf Club for a match with Rutgers University and other schools at the Rutgers Invitational. Women's lacrosse next weekend appears they will be off. I don't see them on the schedule for next weekend. So they've kind of had a bit of a... No, there we go. They're at Brown next week. Their schedule also seems to be kind of limited, where they're only playing Saturday games the rest of the way, and it's nothing but league play for the Big Green as far as women's lacrosse is concerned to wrap up their regular season. All right, we're coming up on 9:50. When we come back, I wanted to just wax episodic here a little bit on one of my favorite cities in the world, a place where I grew up a little bit as a kid and still have fond memories of after a very tragic event earlier this week. That's coming up next. This is Saturday Sports Talk. I'm Greg Fennell, and you are listening to WNTK and WUVR. Got to you. 9:54 on Saturday's Sports Talk. The music's all about the boys here. on SST today. The Vinyls, Boys in Town, Psychedelic Furs, The Boy Who Invented Rock and Roll from their Made in Rain release from 2019. Waitress's Famous, I Know What Boys Like, your mandatory Ramones Animal Boy off an album of the same title, U2's Stories for Boys, and this one seemed to be appropriate for me just by the name of the band, Baltimora, from many years ago, early 80s, I believe, in Tarzan Boy. That's your tunage here on Saturday Sports Talk. The reason I pulled that one out had nothing to do with the city at all, but the city has been foremost in my thoughts all week long since the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse with the container ship that hit it early morning Monday, I believe it was. I was thinking about it this week, having passed through the city back in November. My wife and I were driving down to North Carolina for a wedding, and as we got to the north end of the Baltimore Beltway, where I-95 meets I-695, I looked off to the east, saw the Key Bridge, and said, "Hey, you want to go over that?" And my wife, who is deathly scared of any bridge, any big bridge over water, she cringes at the thought of crossing the Tappan Zee or the George Washington Bridge or the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, insists that I drive down the left-hand lane as close to the median as possible so she doesn't have to look at the water. She said no, and of course we didn't go through that way, which is, I knew she would say no, but it really just stunned me. Maybe not to the extent of, you know, we all know where we were when September 11 happened or when the Challenger exploded. Maybe not quite to that extent with the Key Bridge, but it's still a tragedy of unspeakable measure for the city. I'd been over the bridge many times in my life, driving home from college from Long Island back to D.C. Growing up, I always ally myself with D.C. because that was, you know, 15, 20 minutes away. Our field trips in school were going to the Capitol or visiting the White House or going to the museums or whatever. If I had spare time, I was off in the Air and Space Museum. And of course, sports were the Senators very early on, Redskins occasionally, if you ever get tickets, mostly soccer. And then, of course, Capitals hockey out in the Capitol Center through the 70s and 80s. But Baltimore was only, you know, downtown was only 45 minutes away from me. And Memorial Stadium, where the Orioles played, was right smack in the middle of the city. Back in the late 70s, the only ways that you could get through Baltimore was either the Baltimore Harbor Tunnel, which was a dingy, dark, dirty, ancient thing, or driving through the center of the city through streets, because there was no highway that went straight through Baltimore, or take the Baltimore Beltway around counter or clockwise, the real long way to get around the city. So the opening of the Key Bridge in 77 really did a lot for the city from a commuter standpoint. It completed the Baltimore Beltway, but also made the Port of Baltimore a lot more accessible and made the southeast portion of the city more prone to development and homes and things like that. Very hard-scrabble neighborhood. Baltimore is a city that has shown its warts regularly over the years and has fought hard to overcome them. There have been racial issues in parts of the city, which is not unusual for any major city. They have undergone rebirth in a number of ways. Much of the time I spent in Baltimore was in the harbor area where Harbor Place Shopping Center was, where the USS Constellation, I believe, is the ship that's in Baltimore Harbor, not far from Fort McHenry. Then eventually Oriole Park at Camden Yards was built, walking distance from the harbor. The Baltimore Ravens Stadium was built as well. I spent a lot of time in Baltimore at indoor soccer games at the Baltimore Civic Center, since moved to Towson University. So Baltimore has always been close to me, and that's why it really kind of hurt to see what happened on Monday. There have been stories of incredible forethought, bravery by police to keep cars off the bridge before the collapse, by the captain of the ship that apparently lost power before it hit the pillar that took the bridge down, may have saved a lot of lives. Still tragic, at least 6 fatalities of workers who were on the bridge doing pothole repair and other things. And there may still be more fatalities from this, because there's really been no indication from the stories I've been reading about cars falling into the Patapsco River, which is what reaches the Port of Baltimore. So there may be more to this as time goes on. It is an economic tragedy, but the state and the federal government are responding. The Port of Baltimore is an important part of shipping on the East Coast, big source of coal, of automobiles, I believe, and of course it's a destination for cruise ships as well, and that's all going to be inaccessible for months. It's going to be an incalculable financial loss, but my heart goes out to, I guess you could say, my second city from where I grew up. Still feel special thoughts about it, and I hope that Baltimore is able to get over this tragedy and do so slowly, gradually, intelligently, and responsibly. And I have every belief in the world that's going to happen, but my thoughts are out to Baltimore through this tragedy. That's it for Saturday Sports Talk today. I'm Greg Fennell. We've got Bob Hingston and Rob Woodard coming up in a couple of moments for Valley Buzz. Don't forget Red Sox baseball. We can talk about it now. They're in Seattle, 8:40, the broadcast time as they continue their series with the Mariners. You've been listening to Saturday Sports Talk right here on WNTK and WUVR. Have a great weekend and have a great Easter holiday, everybody. Take care.